case, United States versus Klebig, Mr. Kaiser.
Good morning. I'm going to try to raise this if I could. How do we raise this? Good morning. I'm Richard Kaiser. I'm here representing appellant Alan Klebig. Mr. Klebig is here having been convicted of possessing two firearms which were to be registered with the government. We have raised two kinds of issues in our appeal, one being a sentencing issue, the other being a raising some errors we believe were committed at trial. I'd like to deal with the sentencing issue first. The appellant's chief sentencing argument at the trial court level was that prison was not necessary in this case, that a sentence other than prison addressed all the sentencing goals of adequate punishment, dealing with any rehabilitative needs that Mr. Klebig had, protecting the community, deterrent, those kinds of things. Our position was that probation was the appropriate sentence of the court. The sentencing judge, at no time during his remarks, explained why it rejected that option. In fact, if you review the record, nowhere in his remarks is probation or a prison sentence other than prison even mentioned. In this circuit, the law is that where a court refuses to accept the principal sentencing argument of an appellant, it must explain why, if that argument or if the appellant's position is not frivolous. The court did not do so here. As a result, we argue that a remand for resentencing is required. It cannot be said that the court was not aware of what our position was. A sentencing memorandum had been submitted to the court well before sentencing, arguing at length why probation was the sentence to be imposed. Likewise, we argued at length at the hearing itself that was the sentence that was most appropriate, nor was a proposal, or could the proposal be labeled frivolous. In fact, the government, in its brief, does not even take that position. In fact, many would argue that probation in this situation was a classic option to consider. Mr. Klebig was 50 years of age, had a criminal history score of zero, only criminal record dating back 20 and 30 years, and those being misdemeanors. The pre-sentence report identified no rehabilitative needs that could only be addressed through incarceration. He was not considered a threat to the public. That was demonstrated by the fact that he was on bond for almost 2 years while this case was pending. Was permitted to remain on bond following his conviction. In fact, was permitted to remain on bond and self-report even after being sentenced. Finally, the man had an exemplary work history, worked his entire adult life. Two of his employers took a day out of their lives, busy schedules, to come to court and advocate on his behalf, and described his work ethic as being exemplary. And so, from the appellant's perspective, the key issue to be addressed by the sentencing court was not whether the sentence should be 27 months or 33 months or 40 months, but the key question was, did Mr. Klebig have to go to prison at all? Whether he should be pulled out of the community, away from his job, family, home, and incarcerated. The sentencing court never addressed that. In fact, the remarks of the sentencing court that deals with the 3553 sentencing issues only take up two pages of this record. The majority of those two pages consist of sentencing remarks by the court not dealing with the specific sentencing factors as they applied to Mr. Klebig, his strengths, his weaknesses, but rather dealt with gun laws in general and why the public supports them, why the legislature passes them, why they are needed. That, we concede, is certainly a part of the sentencing equation, but it only gets you so far.
And, of course, the judge didn't, he did not believe Mr. Klebig's testimony, did he?
One of the two things that the court mentioned at sentencing, and almost in passing, was One, that he had a very good record, but on the other hand, the court contrasted that with the fact that the court believed Mr. Klebig had lied at trial. That is true. Whether that in and of itself should infer that that was why the court rejected probation, I think, is rejected by the case law in this circuit. I think the case law here makes it clear that the court here cannot be satisfied that the court used a particular ground to reject a sentencing proposal that's non-frivolous unless it states so. Otherwise, you're left to speculate as to whether the court even considered it. In fact, you might have a situation where a particular judge has a personal opinion that nobody convicted of this kind of offense should ever be considered for probation. Certainly that position could not be countenanced by the court, and that's why to weed out that situation and other scenarios, this court requires that the sentencing court on the record explain why it rejects such a proposal. We don't even have, not only do we not have direct statements by the court as to why it rejected this proposal, we don't have any indirect ones either. For instance, this isn't a case where the court said...
Are you going to say anything about the other issues?
I was going to jump to that in just a second, Judge. In fact, I'll do that now. The other issue I wanted to talk about was, looking at these other two issues, is the cumulative effect that those errors had on this trial. In this case, credibility was everything. In fact, the jury's assessment of Mr. Klebig's credibility was key. As of the time that the government rested, they had proven certain things. They had proved that he had possessed a modified rifle, and they had proven that he had been found with a rifle with an oil filter taped to the top. What they had not proven by any credible or direct evidence was whether he knew that the firearm in count one was a rifle as opposed to a pistol. After all, it had been changed dramatically. The part of the barrel had been taken off. The stock was missing. It was hard to identify. They had not proved his knowledge, nor had they proved that what he intended to use the oil filter on the rifle for.
I know, but, you know, forgive me, but you're dealing with a man who owned more than 24 guns, read gun magazines, attended gun shows, had been using guns since he was a teenager. All of that makes it much less likely that he was ignorant of the use of cans of silencers or of the nature of sawed-off shotguns.
The best response to that, Judge, is that there was another witness who testified in this case, a key witness for the government, Detective Beisbier, who was more qualified than Mr. Klebig to be able to tell the difference between a rifle and a pistol. After all, he had been not only had all the same kinds of things you just mentioned related to Mr. Klebig about using guns, possessing guns, taking them apart, cleaning them. This detective had had training in identifying firearms, and yet prior testimony he had given in prior court proceedings under oath, he himself admitted he was not able to identify this rifle that was charged in count one as to whether it was a rifle or a pistol. So all those things you said about Mr. Klebig were true and more so by Detective Beisbier, and he couldn't tell the difference.
But, of course, he wasn't on trial.
Well, but if the issue is how easy it would have been to identify this changed, altered weapon in count one, then his credentials will certainly become critical as if you're going to judge Mr. Klebig by those kinds of standards.
Of course, obviously, this is not a shotgun, which is usually the concern about sawing off the barrel of the weapon.
No, sir. It was a rifle. It was a rifle. Yes, sir.
Is that a common charge, sawing off a rifle barrel?
I don't know how many cases the government charges of that sort, Judge. It was the first one I had encountered.
I never heard of it. That's why I asked the question.
The point I was getting to was that credibility of Mr. Klebig was critical. His testimony regarding not knowing that he was dealing with a pistol or a rifle as opposed to a pistol, again, was not incredible given the testimony of Detective Beisbier. Likewise, the intent that he had with by fixing the oil filter to the end of the rifle, that testimony was not implausible either, because he had testified about how he believed it could be used as a flash hider, a device that is sold in magazines and in other places. And so the credibility issue was key. What the defense was unable to deal with and should not have been required to deal with was all the other baggage that the government here attached to Mr. Klabig, in our minds, consisting of evidence that was irrelevant, and even that evidence that might have been in part relevant was misused and introduced excessively. I'm talking about the irrelevant evidence, such as the sign that was on his house, the fact that he had a security system, all the testimony put on about the legal weapons, repetitively, all with a view towards, and I think the government successfully and effectively did so, by characterizing Mr. Klabig as a, quote, menacing neighbor, as an odd duck, somebody who was to be concerned about, feared, and eccentric, obsessed with privacy. All this created an aura that the defense should not have been required to deal with. It impinged on his credibility immensely, and again, much of it was irrelevant. The same was true about the government's use of this demonstration during closing arguments, which we believe introduced new facts into the record, dealing with their view that Mr. Klabig had previously affixed an oil filter to yet another weapon. If the jury embraced that position, first introduced during closing argument, they necessarily would have had to have found that Mr. Klabig lied in material ways during his testimony. That was the error, and that's why they were not harmless. Cumulatively, they caused a jury, could have caused a jury, to make credibility determinations based on totally improper reasons. I'm going to save the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Kaiser. Ms. Hoffman?
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Gail Hoffman. I represented the United States of America before the district court. I will begin my remarks with addressing the sentencing issue. First of all, the court is...
Before you do that, I'm upset about your use of 404B evidence. Well, I'm not sure that's the right characterization, but I think the introduction of evidence that, you know, he's preoccupied with security and so on was extremely improper. He may be paranoid, he may be determined to kill any burglar and so on, but I don't see what that has to do with illegal weaponry. He has a lot of legal weapons. They'll kill burglars just as effectively as the illegal ones. So, just harping on that seems to me very improper, as well as the closing argument business, the demonstration and closing argument with the filter and the gun. I think it's all extremely improper.
Your Honor, if I may, first of all, with respect to the closing argument, those items were in evidence. The loose oil...
Here's whether they're in evidence. You don't use closing argument to make demonstrations to the jury. That's something you have... You have a witness do during the trial. You don't spring it on the defendant in the closing argument.
Your Honor, as the record establishes, this is something that we discovered rather late in the trial. Number one, it wasn't sprung on the defendant.
That's not a good excuse. If you discover something late in the trial, you can ask for the trial to be delayed. Or there are all sorts of ways of dealing with that problem rather than turning the closing argument into an evidentiary hearing.
Your Honor, it really wasn't an evidentiary hearing. These items were in evidence. It's no difference than, let's say, in a drug case, taking bindles from one stash house to another and comparing it and saying,
yes. In closing argument?
In closing argument. These items are in evidence.
What do you do in your office?
No, I would like to point out also, Your Honor, that before going into this in closing, I broached this out of the presence of the jury and let the judge hear what I wanted to do during closing argument. The judge heard argument from me, the judge heard the argument from counsel, and the judge...
The judge's management of this trial strikes me as extremely lax. Now, this business about you know, the worth dying for, the warning, the security warning, that doesn't have anything to do with illegal guns.
Your Honor,
that just means he's anxious and he's threatening burglars with killing them. But as I say, you kill a person with lawful guns. You don't need to saw off the... You know, the business of sawing off a barrel, as Judge Cuddy says, it's usually a shotgun. But that the purpose of that is concealment. Well, if you're in your own house, you don't have to conceal your weapons.
Your Honor, with respect...
There's no motive for that.
With respect to these particular weapons, in fact, the government needs to prove that the defendant possessed the weapons in question. And at the start of the trial, it wasn't clear what the defense would be. That gun, out of all the guns that were in the house, there were only... that gun was underneath the defendant's bed. The long gun with the oil filter was in the defendant's closet.
But look, the oil filter... business, what does that have to do with defending yourself against a burglar? What do you need a silencer for if you shoot a burglar?
I think it goes more towards the gun that was concealed underneath the bed.
Well, wait a second. You keep moving around. Now, what does the silencer have to... What does the silencer have to do with defending against a burglar?
Well, with the silencer, I'm not saying that would have been the gun that he would have used against a burglar. But in terms of it's relevant as it related to his possession.
Let's talk about what does sawing off a barrel have to do with defending against burglars, and what is and why is a warning sign? Why is putting up a warning sign? Why does that bear on whether you have illegal weapons?
Put one of the issues at...
If you post a sign on your house, you say, this house is defended by a pit bull. But in fact, it's not. On the other hand, you have an illegal gun. And you put that evidence in, you say, well, yeah,
One of the issues at trial was whether or not this defendant was familiar enough with guns to know whether or not those illegal...
It has nothing to do with a warning sign.
It does. A person who posts a warning sign suggesting that nothing in this house is worth dying for suggests that that is a person familiar with weapons and is able to defend himself and his homestead. That relates to his possession of that particular gun with the illegal characteristics.
I'd like to get back to the sawed-off 22 rifle. What in the world would you use a sawed-off 22 rifle for?
Well,
the 22 rifles are useful for shooting rabbits and squirrels.
The picture is...
If you sawed one off, I don't know what they'd be useful for.
Well, the picture is included in the appendix to my brief. It's appendix number 10. And it looks to me like a gun that would be easily concealed with a scope. I can't go into the defendant's mind and say what
What's
he would...
What's the purpose of concealment when he's trying to defend his house? Why would you conceal it? How on earth would you... What's this thing on top of it? A scope?
The scope.
How could you conceal this thing?
Well, as you see from the measurement,
it
isn't...
It's 1 foot long.
Right, but it's still...
it's thick.
So it still could be.
Conceal it.
You can conceal it in a jacket. You can conceal it underneath a shirt. It's not
underneath a shirt.
You could.
Oh, would you use a 22 rifle to defend your house?
Perhaps. But that's not the threshold here. The threshold for relevance is a low threshold.
No, it isn't, because this is highly prejudicial, all this evidence. This is as Mr. Kaiser said, you made every effort to depict this guy as a nut, as violent, and so on. You threw in everything.
I would disagree
even
with that.
Even though it was entirely, even though all the evidence shows is that, yes, he has some familiarity with guns, which could have been stipulated, or could have been made clear very, very simply. But instead, there's all this piling on.
Judge, the trial was...
There are all sorts of gun nuts in the United States who have a lot of guns, and they're preoccupied with burglaries and so on. And but it's perfectly lawful, all that stuff.
Judge, this isn't a case about burglars. And with all due respect, if I wanted to depict him as you suggest that I do or as counsel suggests that I do, I didn't seek to introduce the marijuana in his bedroom.
Well, at some point, your license could be yoked.
I didn't seek
yanked,
to introduce
right,
the syringe.
For these abuses?
These
you know, what is going on, I think, is that the Department of Justice has decided that if it has what it feels is a strong case, it'll throw in everything it can get away with in order to make it a foolproof case, in case it has a jury that's unsympathetic.
Judge, this case centered around the defendant's knowledge of the illegal characteristics of these two firearms. His possession of all of his lawful weapons was in direct contrast to the illegal firearms. He possessed approximately 20 firearms that had pistol grips, that had stocks, that had studs, that had all of the features that these two items did not. He is the one that put that in issue. As the trial progressed and his possession of these guns was not an issue, which was unclear at the beginning of the trial, there was almost no mention made of the surveillance system nor of the of sign. In fact, the only way the sign was introduced was because the defendant introduced a picture of the sign himself during the defendant's testimony. Mention was made during the first witness's testimony, Detective Beisbeer, and after that, there was a very brief reference to it in cross-examination, a very small reference to it. That's it. The sum of his cross-examination consisted of cross-examining him on his knowledge of the firearms.
What about the closing argument?
Very small mention of it.
But it was mentioned.
It was just in passing, and it was in passing in reference to a comment that Mr. Kaiser made. Mr. Kaiser had two opportunities to give a closing argument. We both argued in the evening, and then the judge felt that we were both allowed additional time, and he gave both of us additional time then the next day. So in terms of these arguments, Mr. Kaiser had two opportunities to rebut them, but the focus of the trial was not on the surveillance system, and it was not on the sign. The focus of the trial was on these particular characteristics of the firearms, the illegal characteristics, and how it was incredible, based upon his knowledge, the defendant's knowledge, of firearms.
Now, Ms. Hoffman, is it true that the first mention of the argument about the second oil can fitting the sawed-off shotgun came in closing?
Yes, but it was brought to the attention of the judge outside the presence of the jury before closing arguments even began. So that argument was never brought before the jury until the judge heard arguments on it and approved it.
But the judge could have been mistaken in allowing it.
Well, what the government did with the oil filter and the gun, two pieces of items in the evidence, was no different than what the defendant did in his closing argument, which was taking a picture of one of the guns that he had introduced into evidence that he believed was a lawful gun similar to the sawed-off gun and juxtaposing it on top of the illegal gun to show how it could easily have been identified as a legal gun. So that was something.
Sawed-off rifle becomes pistol.
Well, that was the defendant's argument that the features of...
What is the technical difference? What's the tech? How do you define a pistol as opposed to a rifle?
Well, this The rifle has to have a certain barrel length, and this had a barrel length that was much shorter, and that was one of the illegal characteristics of this particular...
If you saw it off enough, it becomes a pistol.
Well, if it was originally a rifle and it was sawed off, then it still, even if it appears to be a pistol, it retains its illegal characteristics. But the trial didn't center on the surveillance system. It didn't center upon the sign.
Why were those things in the... Well,
well, because at the beginning of the trial, it wasn't clear whether he would deny possessing them. He admitted it was clear once the testimony began after the first witness that he admitted his possession of those items. That was not something that I could gauge, and that would be it. And those items were relevant as it related to the elements that I needed to prove.
But you mentioned it in closing argument, by which time you knew perfectly well what his position was at trial.
In response to his comments. It was not the heart of the closing argument. It was barely mentioned, if at all. It was barely mentioned.
If at all. You said it was mentioned.
Barely. In passing to the defendant's comments. The heart of this case had to do with the defendant's knowledge of the illegal characteristics. The defendant testified. My cross-examination consisted of essentially rebutting his argument about his argument on the flash hider, indicating that because his mother's property was close to the road, he wanted to make sure that it wasn't noticed by, when he went to hunt the rabbit raccoon, it wasn't noticed by a passing motorist. So a good portion of my cross-examination related to the contradictions of where the mother's house was in relation to the road, and also the other significant portion of my cross-examination related to his knowledge of firearms.
Mm-hmm. That it?
I would like to briefly touch on the court's concern about sentencing, and I believe the court is not required to specifically reject the probation. The court mentioned that it was aware of all the factors involved. He indicated that he went through a lot of the factors to be considered under 3553A. He indicated that he mentioned the need for general deterrence, specific deterrence, in that the defendant, there was disrespect for the law, and he eventually sentenced the defendant to a below-guideline sentence. I think through the sum and substance of his argument, the court clearly, without specifically saying why he was specifically rejecting probation, indicated the reasons why he felt the sentence he imposed was the correct sentence. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Hoffman. So, Mr. Kaiser, how much time does he have? 3 minutes?
Just very briefly, Judge. You cannot read this record and adopt the government's position that their focus was on strictly the illegal weapons. Our complaint about the 24 or two dozen legal weapons and the time they spent putting on evidence of that has to do with just that it was so repetitive. You had a detective initially describing, as he walked through the house, where he found each weapon, describing it, describing that it was loaded, describing each little area of the house where ammunition was found. But it didn't end there. With the same witness, after walking him through that, then the government, over the defense objection, started to introduce pictures, again, of each legal gun as it was found by the same witness. It didn't end there. After, I'm sure, satisfying the jury that Mr. Klebig had a lot of legal weapons and knew how to handle them, they put on yet another detective and introduced physically, again, over the defense objection, each weapon in the presence of the jury, handing it to Detective Selk, asking her to identify the kind of gun it was, and then formed an arc around the witness stand as each weapon was finished with, testifying about, was laid in front of the witness stand. So you had that there during the entire testimony of that portion of the testimony of Detective Selk until the defense got up and asked the judge to remove those weapons. The focus here was not simply on the illegal weapons.
When the government asked Mr. Klebig during cross-examination to hold the firearms and show how he would fire them?
Yes.
Did you object?
I did not object at that time, Your Honor. And no, I probably should have. There had been objections placed in the record both before the trial and during the trial previously about the use of those weapons and the extent of the use of the weapons. You're right, I probably should have objected a third time. It seemed clear to me that the trial court was going to permit the introduction of those records and the cross-examination of Mr. Klebig as to his awareness of how to use them. One last point I want to make. When the government says that it stopped addressing the issue about the sign and the surveillance system and all the legal weapons after it became clear that Mr. Klebig was admitting to being familiar with guns, you need only to review a single page of the transcript during cross-examination of Mr. Klebig late in the game, late in the trial, to undercut that position. You have a whole series of questions by the government at that point. You had firearms all over your living room, didn't you? Ammo all over your living room. Surveillance cameras all over your house. You had more than one surveillance camera, didn't you? You also had a sign outside your house, outside your door, that nothing here is worth dying for. And you had a loaded firearm pretty much in every room, didn't you? That series of questions makes it clear the government's intent here to portray Mr. Klebig in such a way where, again, credibility determinations by the jury were being made for inappropriate reasons. Thank you.
Mr. Kaiser, you were appointed, were you not?
Yes, sir.
We thank you. Ms. Hoffman, I'm